I told you my father doesn't consult with me on matters of court. He didn't invite me to this morning's council, or invite my brothers, for that matter. He wanted to handle this by himself. He paused. I met Arjun D'Amphir. She is very beautiful, and I know my father thinks so, too. It's never too late to have a brief fling, you know, and he's been looking, I can tell. I keep it from my mother, but she's probably noticed anyway.
He better keep a blade under his pillow if he plans to sleep with her, Dar muttered.
So what do you want to do?
Dar was uncertain. Charge over to the Elven Assembly and question whatever it was Arjun was telling the High Council? Demand that she be sent away at once? Somehow he didn't think that was a good idea. He was not an elf and had no standing in Arbalon. Besides, Arjun was too clever to be brushed aside so easily. She would find a way to turn the tables on him, and he would have lost any chance he had of putting a stop to her plans. Besides, it was more important just now that he find Tasha Kanan.
"What did you come here for, anyway?" Brecken asked suddenly.
Dar leaned back in his seat with a sigh. "Well, not for Arjun D'Amphir. I need to find someone. A young girl Driska has been mentoring over the past few weeks. She is exceptionally skilled in the use of magic. Driska has been training her."
Brecken stared.
"But he never trains anyone."
"He's made an exception for Tasha Kanan. She's an Umsford descendant. She's inherited the wish song." His friend drew a sharp intake of breath.
"Well, no wonder you want to find her.
I didn't think there was an Umsford descendant left in the entire Four Lands. She must be the last of that line." Dar shook his head.
"Not quite. She has a brother who can use the magic too, but he is deeply troubled and she is worried about him. She went to find him about a week ago."
"Do you know where she went?"
"A village called Backing Fell, in the Deep Westland. I don't know where it is or even where she is at this point, but there's a reason we have to find her, and find her quickly. I haven't told you this, but the keep was betrayed by one of the druids, an elder of the Inner Circle, a woman who has been with the Order for years. Her name is Clizia Porse. She helped the Scar get inside the keep, making it possible for the druids to be destroyed. She was one of only two druids who survived."
"One of two?" Brecken looked confused.
"Driska Ark was the other.
But he left Paranor months ago.
He was exiled. What was he doing there?"
"He found out what was going to happen and tried to stop it. I went with him. But he trusted Clizia, and she betrayed him. She was the one who used her magic to send Paranor from the Four Lands and into Limbo. When she did so, Driska was inside. So now he's trapped there."
Brecken shook his head. "But you escaped, and now you want to find a way to get him back."
Dar nodded. "I'm hoping Tasha Kanan is the answer. The wish song is a powerful magic. If anyone can help Driska escape his imprisonment, it will be her. I don't know whom else to turn to. I have to find her."
"I know of Backing Fell," Brecken said. "I can get us that far. But if she's left and gone elsewhere..."
"We have to assume she has. I can't track her at this point. I need another way of finding her."
Brecken stared at him for a long moment. Then realization set in.
"No," he said emphatically.
"There isn't any other way."
Dar held his gaze.
"Then find one."
Dar brushed back strands of his long red hair where they fell across his face.
"You have to remove them from wherever your father has them stored and come with me to find her. My father would have me thrown out of the city and banished for life.
Only if he finds out what you've done. You can return them before he even knows they're missing."
Brecken made a rude noise. "You make it sound so simple. But it isn't. He's got them locked away. In his chambers. In a steel box sealed inside the flooring. Even I can't get at them."
"What do you mean?" Dar interrupted. "Since when did you ever let a lock stop you? If you know where they are, you can figure out a way to open it. You probably already have, if I know you."
The elven prince gave him a long, suffering look.
"The blue elf stones. The seeking stones. Magic that can find anything hidden or lost. You want me to steal them from my father and then use them to find this Tasha person. But you don't seem to realize what you're asking of me. You don't seem to appreciate the risk you are asking me to take."
"I understand perfectly," Dar sighed.
and I'm not suggesting you should steal them. I'm only asking you to borrow them. I wouldn't ask it if there were any other way, but there isn't. Borrow, not steal. There's a distinction without a difference.
Brecken was drinking the rest of his ale, one large swallow at a time.
The stones have been locked away for decades.
He looked back at Dar.
I knew you were here for a reason.
He set his glass on the table with a thump.
I hoped it might have something to do with wanting to see me. It does, you know that.
Dar leaned forward, his face intense, his mouth tight.
But it's more than wanting to see an old friend. My entire life has been destroyed. The druids are all dead. Paranor is gone. I have nowhere else to turn. I cannot abandon Driska. I will not. He is the best hope for the Four Lands. The best hope for all of us. He can find a way to stop what's happening. You'll need to find someone else to help you. Brecken, listen to yourself. Let someone else handle this. Who else is there? I'm here because I think that together we can find a way to make all this right. The loss of the druids and Paranor, the imprisonment of Driska, your father's possible infatuation with an enemy who will likely cut his throat if he pursues her, and a foreign race that clearly has ambitions that go far beyond finding a new homeland.
He paused and shook his head.
Please don't refuse me this. Help me. I need you.
Brecken, Elisadil, studied him some more, then sighed.
Even if I wanted to get you the elf stones, I couldn't. Maybe we can find a way, Dar said. They're in a lockbox in the floor of your father's bedroom. Can we get in there without being seen?
Brecken stared at him.
What are you up to?
Dar kept his face expressionless.
You're pretty good at opening locks, remember? And you've opened this one before. Let's find out if you can open it again.
Arjun D'Amphir had waited impatiently for the Elven King and his High Council to make their decision, believing that it would go in her favour, but at the same time worrying it wouldn't. She prowled the hallways restlessly, her scar escort of two soldiers trailing after her like loyal dogs. Not that she thought of them that way. Such an assessment was too limiting. They were there to ward her against harm. They were there to do her bidding whenever summoned, but there were more to her than that. All of the soldiers in her small command were more than just names and faces. She was close to them, the result of years of shared experiences. They were friends. She knew it was wrong to think of men under your command that way, to allow yourself to feel anything for them. A leader should not be personally affected when individual soldiers were lost while in her service. But that was not who she was, and she had known it since she had begun her training with members of her command almost a dozen years ago. During her formative years, they had struggled together to endure both emotional and physical hardships, comrades frequently closer to one another than to their families. Her thoughts shifted momentarily to her relationship with Caldrey. He had served her for years in her campaigns across Eurodia, repeatedly making it possible for her to turn adverse situations to her advantage. Over and over, he had given her invaluable information and advice. That spoke volumes about his devotion to her. But he was too ambitious for his own good, and while she trusted him, that trust was not as complete as she would have liked, especially when it came to his feelings for her. He wanted more from her than she was willing to give. She would have to keep an eye on him. She could not allow her emotions to undermine her authority or to paint her as a vulnerable woman. She stopped at the end of the hallway on what might have been her 20th circuit and stood looking at the home guards and the closed assembly doors. If the Elven King refused her, she would have to reevaluate her whole plan. But there was no help for it. She had done her best to convince him. She had made certain he knew she favoured him. Brief, furtive looks, small acknowledgements, and words that carried possible meanings beyond what they conveyed openly. Tricks of seduction, and she had used them all. Overt actions would not work with Gerundrin Elisadil. He was too proper and restrained for that. He would expect her to exercise discretion and show consideration for his place in the Elven hierarchy. He would not be immune to her charms, a princess of another people, a young woman who was barely more than a girl. But he would not risk mistaking the nature of her interest and looking foolish. For now, just piquing his interest was enough.
She was planting seeds for the future, for a time when something more would be required.
"Princess," one of her escorts whispered.
At the end of the hallway, the doors to the assembly were opening, and the king and his ministers were filing out. She stood where she was, waiting. But when she saw the king come toward her, she went to meet him halfway, not bothering to hold back.
"Princess Arjun,"
he said with a small bow. He had used her first name, a small gesture that gave her hope. When he reached for her hand, she gave it to him. His fingers squeezed hers lightly. Her bow in response to his was much deeper and more profound.
"King Charindran?"
His smile was genuine.
"The ministers of the Elven High Council and I are in agreement. You shall have what you have asked for. Whatever you choose to do about any aggressive acts on the part of the Federation will not concern us, so long as the Skaar stay clear of the Westland and Elven interests in the other lands. You've indicated what you will do to keep your end of the bargain, and we will hold you to it."
"As you should, High King, and the Skaar will not disappoint you."
"The Federation are no friends to the Elves, Arjun. They never have been."
He bent a tad closer.
"I think I may speak for the High Council when I assure you that if their aggression threatens you, we will take steps to back them away. I think we will make good neighbors, the Skaar and the Elven people."
She managed not to roll her eyes. Instead, she gripped his hands tightly.
"This means so much. You have my eternal gratitude. I shall not forget your kindness."
He stepped closer.
"I hope you mean that, Princess. I hope our alliance will bring you back to Arbalon soon, as my personal guest. I would like to know you better."
Arjun smiled, her eyes never leaving the king's face.
"As I would you. Until then, Akre Dorst, Jwin Bay."
"Which means?"
"In the Skaar tongue? It has no literal translation."
"An approximation, then?"
Her smile was dazzling, and she managed to blush.
"I think it best I keep it to myself until my return. I leave it to your imagination until then."
She backed away, signalling to her Skaar soldiers.
"I shall have my home guards guide you back to the palace where you can retrieve your belongings,"
the Elven King said. He turned from her with a final smile and went back up the hallway. When he had disappeared out the door of the assembly building, she looked at her soldiers. The older, Jenna, gave her a conspiratorial wink.
"Aren't I much too young for you?"
he translated.
"Tender words, Princess."
"He will never learn their real translation," she smiled, "unless you tell him."
She indicated their readiness to depart, the home guards assigned to escort them, and did not bother to note the look she was certain her soldiers were exchanging. In a group, the five of them walked back through the palace grounds, following the pathways leading to the royal quarters. When they reached their destination, they entered through the east doors and walked to the rooms where the Skaar had left their weapons and cloaks. The home guards left them there, advising them to continue down the hallway until they were out of the palace. It was midday by now, and Arjun and her companions had flown here directly from their encampment. They were tired and hungry, but Arjun had made it plain beforehand that they would not be staying in the city any longer than they had to. Instead, they would fly east until they were beyond the borders of the Westland and make camp for the night on the Strelheim Plains. They would eat and rest then, and resume their journey back to the rest of the advance force on the following day. She thanked the Elven home guards for their assistance. Gathering up their weapons and cloaks, they went out the door and down the hallway as directed. Behind them, the home guards watched them go. Arjun walked slightly apart from her companions, lost in thought. There was a great deal to consider and not a lot of time in which to do so. The variables of her plan worried her, especially when it came to her father. He was growing steadily less dependent on her. She still had his ear, but she did not feel he was as strongly inclined to defer to her judgment. She worried that he no longer trusted her as he once had. On every one of her other campaigns, he had awaited her summons before acting. But this time his precipitous departure for the Four Lands was a clear indication of his loss of faith. Whether this was due to the rumours of men like Sten Orr, or his own misguided lack of faith, it was hard to know. But overall, his trust in her had eroded. She did not like to think what that meant, but she knew she would have to do something about it. Still in the lead, she rounded a corner in the hallway and watched a door open ahead of them. A familiar voice was speaking, a voice she could not mistake. She slowed, then stopped short in surprise. She was face to face with Dar Lee. 10. For a time that neither could have measured, Dar Lee and Arjun Diamphir just stared at each other. Then, unexpectedly, she smiled.
"We just can't seem to stay away from each other, can we?"
She stepped closer to him. Their eyes locked, then she looked past him to Bracken.
"And look who you have with you, the king's youngest. What sort of mischief are you two up to, I wonder?"
"You should look to your own conscience, princess," Dar snapped.
Arjun's exquisite features showed an exaggerated dismay.
"Should I? Whatever for?"
"What did you tell my father?"
Bracken demanded, stepping forward to confront her.
"What did you say to the Elven High Council?"
Arjun spared him no more than a momentary glance.
"Perhaps you should ask him. If he wants you to know, I expect he will tell you. It isn't for me to say."
"It's a bold move coming here like this," Dar said. "You risk much in revealing yourself this way."
She shrugged.
"No more than I am willing to risk. Confrontation is better than hesitation, and I've always believed caution is overrated."
"So what are you doing here?"
She seemed to give the matter a few moments of thought.
"I don't suppose there is any reason not to answer. I came to offer an alliance. I want the elves and the Scar to become friends."
Dar shook his head.
"A nice sentiment, but I suspect your friendship comes at a price."
"My enmity comes at a price, Dar Lee, not my friendship. Only those who stand in my way need fear anything from me."
"The druids, for example. They paid a rather high price, even the ones who were unaware of what was happening right up until the moment of their deaths. So how did they stand in your way?"
"You were there, on the plains of Rab. You saw it all yourself. Those druids who accompanied you acted impulsively and foolishly. They threatened us, and it cost them. Those at Paranor turned a blind eye to what their leadership was doing to them. They did nothing to hold those leaders accountable, and thereby invited their own fate. The druid order was sickened from head to foot. It would have come down eventually, like any dying tree, even if I had not acted."
Dar raised an eyebrow.
"Not a conclusion I would have reached. The druid order was a living, breathing, working collection of men and women who were doing something they strongly believed in, and they did much good over the years. The head might have been muddled, granted, but the body was functioning. But then I think we see things a bit differently, you and I."
She stepped back, as if giving herself space.
"It's a difference mostly of degree."
She paused, giving him a look, her blue eyes taking his measure.
"Why are you here? Have you come for a visit with the Elisadil family, or for something more pressing?"
He smiled blandly.
"The Elisadils are friends from a long time back, princess. I haven't visited for a while."
"And you decide to pay a visit at a time when the keep has disappeared and the druids are mostly gone? An odd choice."
"I have nothing better to do. Besides, I thought they should know what you did at Paranor. But I suppose you already told them, didn't you?"
"I thought it should come from me. But if you worry for their safety, you needn't. I am no threat to them, and Gerendron knows this. I intend the Scar and the Elves to be allies, just as I said. A simple enough arrangement that will benefit us both."
Dar didn't miss the way she used the Elven King's first name, as if they were already close friends. He remembered Bracken saying that beautiful women easily charmed his father, and he experienced a moment of intense frustration.
"You wish to ally with us?"
Bracken was openly appalled.
"An invader who covets our land and would kill our people?"
Arjun turned on him at once.
"Caution, Prince Bracken. You speak harsh words without cause. The Scar do not covet your land.
and have no intention of killing your people. We have come to find a new home, yes, but not at your expense. Our interest in the Four Lands lies elsewhere.
Yet what happened to Paranor and to those troll tribes would suggest your interest lies everywhere, Dar countered. Arjun shrugged.
Things are not always as simple as we would like them to be. You will come to realize this in time. Now I have to go. This unexpected encounter has been pleasant, but I have work to do.
Brecken stepped forward to block her way.
Maybe you should be made to come to terms with what you've done first. Perhaps letting you leave would be a mistake.
Despite his anger with Arjun, Dali stepped between them, sensing that matters might be getting out of hand. There wasn't much to be gained by picking a fight at this point, and trying to stop Arjun from leaving was pointless. Any guest of the Elven King was under his protection, and any attempt to interfere would win a harsh reprimand and perhaps cost both of them the King's good graces.
"Peace, Brecken," he said quietly, drawing his friend back. "Let her go for now."
He glanced at Arjun.
"Another time."
She smiled in response and put her hand on his chest.
"I told you we would meet again. I suspect we are not yet done with each other, Dali. I believe we will have further encounters down the road. I hope so. I look forward to them."
"You should be careful what you wish for, Princess," he said. She removed her hand and stepped back.
"And you should be more astute at recognizing who your friends are."
She brushed past him and did not look back. Her scar companions trailed after her, giving the elf and the Highlander sharp looks as they passed by. Dar watched her go, reflecting. She was dismissing him for now. She would learn nothing more of his intentions today, and that was enough. She realized he was not there because of her. He could not have suspected she was coming. Their encounter was simply by chance. But she knew as well that he was in Arbalon for more than a simple visit to Brecken Elisadil and his family. She knew his reason for coming would have something to do with the loss of Paranor and the Druid Order. She might wonder what that something was and how much trouble it might cause her later, but she knew better than to pursue the matter now. Just as he knew better than to underestimate the purpose of her visit and its impact on the King.
"She's planning something," Brecken said quietly, a troubled look on his face.
"She's always planning something," Dar replied, looking back at him.
"It's unfortunate we had to run into her like that. I would have preferred she not know I was here at all. She'll want to discover what I've come for, and she'll keep nosing around until she does." His friend made a dismissive gesture.
"Let her try. No one knows the reason you've come but the two of us."
He paused.
"Still, she does seem inordinately interested in you, like there is something between you that only you and she know."
Dar sighed.
"In a way, perhaps there is. She saved my life once, and then I returned the favor, though something tells me I might live to regret it. I'll tell you about it later."
"I think it's more than that. I saw how she looked at you, sort of like a hungry cat eyeing an appetizing mouse."
Dar ignored the comment. "She's right about one thing. You should ask your father what was said in the assembly. Find out exactly what she came here for. But for now we need to get to the Elfstones before either she or your father finds out what we're up to, so lead the way." They went deeper into the palace, following a series of hallways to Gerendron Elisadil's private quarters. No one was about, so there was no one to question where the two of them were going. When they reached the king's bedroom, they slipped inside, closing the door behind them and locking it. Then went into the small room off the sleeping chamber that served as his private office. Dar looked around with appreciation. Gerendron's quarters were sumptuous, beautifully decorated with tapestries, paintings, precious glass and thick rugs. Flowers in vases had been placed throughout. Sunlight flooded through windows from high up on a south-facing wall, streaming across a desk and chair and cabinets situated against the wall opposite. Brecken pulled back a rough woven rug, laid out in the centre of the room, then ran his hands across the smooth flooring in a series of sweeping motions that seemed to brush away an invisible veneer to reveal the outline of a panel set into the floor.
"My father told me about it once when I was much younger," he said. He had a mischievous look on his face. "I had asked him about the Elfstones, and I think he didn't see the harm in showing them to me. After all, I was a boy, and the door was concealed and secured by magic. What harm could it do to tell me?
except that I was one of those precocious children who couldn't let well enough alone. Having seen the elf stones once, I wanted to see them again. I had the concealment unlocked within the week. I knew a few things about magic, even then.
You took the elf stones out?
Dar grinned.
He would have skinned you alive if he'd found that out, at the very least.
But I was careful. I put everything back the way it had been. You know how it is when you're young, you have to test your boundaries, find out what's being kept hidden from you. I didn't tell him what I'd done, but I told my mother.
And she didn't tell on you?
No, not her. She thought I could do no wrong. She still feels that way. I'm her youngest. She loves it that I won't be king. Prefers it that I am the designated chief gardener of the Carolan. After I shared my secret about accessing the vault to get to the Elfstones, I think she thought that giving me up to my father would stop me from ever sharing anything with her again. She would have been right, too.
Dar pictured a younger Bracon Elisadil with his mother. Arielena Elisadil was a small, lively woman with exquisite features and a wonderful laugh, but also a quick temper. She had always been kind to Dar when he had come to visit, and she liked it that he and Bracon were close. She hadn't changed much over the years, and Dar regretted that he probably wouldn't have time to see her on this visit. Bracon knelt and lifted away the floor panel by placing his hands carefully on its surface so the wood adhered to his fingertips. The panel was thick and sturdy, yet it seemed to weigh nothing as he pulled it free and set it aside. Another small elven magic, Dar presumed. Over the past 20 years or so, the elves had returned to mastering arts they had let slide for many centuries, their slow retreat from the other races apparently giving them the impetus to seek out knowledge they had once possessed and lost. Theirs was a culture of magic established before the coming of humans and the Great Wars, and it felt right that they should seek it out anew. Dar only wished he had such a heritage to reclaim, but when it came to magic, he had only the sword he wore strapped across his back. A fighting weapon, a bringer of death, not life. He brushed these thoughts aside and watched as Bracon reached into a shadowy interior, not brightened even marginally by the sunlight that fell across its opening. Slowly, he extracted an odd container. It appeared to be a square box constructed of silvery metal, but it revealed no joints, openings, or locks, and instead was perfectly smooth on all 6 surfaces.
The elf stones have been in this box ever since I last saw them, the prince observed, his voice gone distant and soft. I always thought we should have been doing something with their magic, employing them for some useful purpose. My brothers openly urged our father to do so, but he just brushed us off. One time, some years back, he said something about their history being darker than we realized. But he never explained what he meant. But I know it had to do with the past, when the Druids and the Umsfords used the stones on all those dangerous quests. He held the box carefully in front of him. The Druids wanted these elf stones, you know. They tried very hard to persuade us to give them up. Offenglow Elisadil gave them back to us years ago, after she became Ardris. She was an elf, and she thought they should be with her people because only elves could use them anyway. She wouldn't return the crimson elfstones, though, the ones that were brought out of the Forbidding when the Elkris failed during her early years in the Druid Order. She thought them too dangerous to be anywhere but locked away in Paranor. But these, the Seeking Stones. He trailed off.
Dar nodded.
She was probably right, even though the Druids didn't prove to be any better at keeping their magic safe. They couldn't even keep themselves safe in the end. He gestured. Let's have a look.
Bracon glanced down at the box, his narrow features tightening as he worked his fingers around its surface, searching. His concentration was visible on his face and in his eyes, and eventually he found the places on the smooth sides he was looking for and pressed hard. The box shimmered, and the top slowly lifted away. Inside was a leather pouch, closed tightly by drawstrings.
"How did you discover the secret of opening this puzzle box?"
Dar asked his friend.
You were, what, mid-teens?
Bracon nodded.
The secret is in the nature of the material that makes up the container, an organic substance with which I am familiar. It serves to ward sections of the Carolan, and the exploration of its properties taught me how it functioned. It took me a while, but I knew what to look for.
I just kept experimenting until the secret revealed itself. It wasn't words or gestures, or anything so mundane. It was a bonding of flesh to metal.
Another kind of magic, Dar observed.
Another kind. An elven kind.
Earlier you hinted you couldn't even get inside the lockbox. Dar gave him a look.
Testing me, were you?
Brecken pulled a face.
Just wanted to see how determined you were to do this. How serious you were about using them. It doesn't mean I don't think it's any less risky or dangerous to take them out.
He reached into the container and removed the pouch. Setting aside the container, he loosened the drawstrings and dumped their contents into his palm. The three brilliant blue gems glimmered as if alive, their hue reminiscent of a twilight summer sky. Dar stepped close and peered at them in awed silence.
"So when do we leave?" he asked.
They quickly decided that sooner was better than later, but Dar thought Brecken should first inform his mother of their plans. She would be more understanding and more willing to help cover for them should their absence be discovered too quickly. Not to mention that she would be more cautious about revealing what she knew to Arjun the Amphir, should the princess or her scar come sniffing around. So Brecken closed the box and resealed it, the elf stones removed and tucked away in his pocket, and then lowered it back into its hiding place and returned the floor to its previous condition. Dar pulled the rug back in place, and they retraced their steps down the hallway to the reception room Brecken had taken Dar into earlier. Leaving the Highlander to himself, the Elven Prince went off to speak with his mother. Dar was prepared for a long wait, but it took Brecken less time than he had expected. He was back within the half hour, his mission completed.
"Mother sends her love, and says you are responsible for me."
Dar smiled.
"She would say that. She also said you can justify her faith in you by bringing me back safe and sound."
By now, Arjun and her Scar companions would have made their departure from Arbalon. Assured there would not be another unexpected encounter, Dar and Brecken set out for the Elicidal private airfield to prepare for their own impending journey. As an elven prince, Brecken had an airship designated for his personal use, which was kept, housed, and serviced year-round. Since the vessel was always fully provisioned, there were no further preparations necessary once they reached it, and the friends boarded and were quickly away. They flew out of Arbalon, heading southwest, in the general direction of Backing Fell. Their craft was an expanded, single-mast sloop that could easily hold six but still be flown by a single pilot. Even though his help wasn't needed, Dar worked the radian draws and light sheaths while Brecken manned the helm. Once they had crossed the Rilsong and come in sight of the eastern borders of the Sarindanon, Dar tapped Brecken on the shoulder.
"Find a place to land so you can use the elf stones. We need to be sure of our direction."
Brecken immediately took the airship down to a clearing at the edge of the forests bordering the Sarindanon. Dar secured the radian draws and then lowered the mooring lines that would hold the airship in place. Once they were hovering just a few feet off the ground, he threw out a rope ladder, went over the railing and anchored the lines to tree trunks and exposed roots so the vessel was stable. Brecken followed him down, and together they moved to a rise, overlooking miles of farms and cultivated fields that made up the bulk of the soil-rich valley. Dar shielded his eyes.
"Pretty country. I could live here."
His friend nodded, a crooked smile spreading across his lean face.
"I've actually considered it. I'd leave Arbalon and move here in a second flat if I could. I'd even leave the caravan. There are others who could do my work. But I don't want to leave my mother alone. She's not close to my father these days, hasn't been for a while. My brothers don't seem to see it, but they have their own lives and families, so she turns to me. I don't want to abandon her."
Dar nodded.
"We all make such choices. I thought to go back to my family when I saw what had been done to Paranor, but I don't think I can abandon the Druid's Keep either. Or Driska. Neither one is your responsibility."
"You could argue that, but it's more in how you see it than how it is." He gave Brecken a nudge.
"Might as well use the stones, Breck. See if you can find Tasha."
The Elven Prince pulled a face.
"This isn't going to be as easy as you seem to think. First of all, I have no idea what this Tasha person looks like, and I have to picture her to find her, or at least provide the elf stones with some identifying characteristics.
Second, I've never used this magic, so I'm not entirely sure what I'm doing.
Dar stared in disbelief.
What do you mean you've never used the magic? Not even once? Just to see what it can do? How could you resist? You had access to it any time you chose.
You haven't been paying attention.
I told you I hadn't taken them out of their hiding place again since I found them. There's a reason for that. Using magic triggers a response. It calls attention to itself. I didn't want to risk Father finding out what I'd done. So I looked at them that one time and then left them alone.
You are a true disappointment, Dar declared in frustration.
I'd assumed you must have used them at least once. How could you stand not knowing what it felt like?
Brecken laughed.
Not everyone thinks sticking their head in a moor cat's mouth is a good idea.
Dar stared, surprised at the rebuke.
If you say so.
Brecken was grinning broadly.
Glad we have an understanding. Now, describe Tasha.
Dar did, focusing on her more memorable characteristics, the white blonde hair, the lavender eyes and the sculpted features. Then he described her dress, although it was hard to be sure what she would be wearing now. He described how she had moved and responded during their conversations, how she used her gestures and facial expressions. When he was finished, Brecken shrugged.
I'd do my best. Maybe the hair and eyes will be enough.
He fished the pouch from his pocket and spilled the elf stones into his open palm. In the bright daylight, they seemed to absorb the sun's rays, their deep blue color enhanced until they appeared twice their normal size. Dar stood back as Brecken gathered his thoughts, the elf stones clutched in his fist. Then the elven prince closed his eyes and went perfectly still. Finally, after long moments, he lifted the hand with the elf stones until it pointed southwest, in the general direction of Backing Fell. Brecken stood like a statue, arm raised and outstretched, eyes closed, face mirroring an intense concentration. Dar watched silently, wondering if anything was going to happen. It wasn't. The elf stones failed to respond. Brecken lowered his arm and looked over, giving a reluctant shrug.
Nothing. Try again, Dar urged.
Brecken resumed his stance, his arm lifting once more. This time he kept his eyes open, looking off into the distance as if willing Tasha Kanin to appear. The concentration on his face was total. Dar waited, but the elf stones remained dark.
Picture her in motion, Dar said quietly, firmly, as if she's struggling with something, or perhaps trying to defend herself.
The elven prince did not respond, but he remained in place, his arm still stretched out. He inhaled deeply and then exhaled, and his body tensed as his free hand closed about the one that held the elf stones, both arms now extended out from his body. A glimmer of blue broke through the cracks between his fingers.
Yes!
Dar hissed excitedly. Then shards of indigo exploded from Brecken Elicidal's clenched fists and shot away into the distance in a ribbon of brightness that carried both watchers with it, down from the rise and across the Sarandanan sharply south and over the Rilsong once again, past forests and hills, gullies and streams, and farther still. The rock spur mountains rose in the distant west, and the light swept past them, and angled east toward where the turfing bordered the edges of the matted breaks, and then curled in on itself until it found a solitary traveller standing next to a small aircraft. It was Tasha Kanin, looking north toward Elven country in the direction of Dar and Brecken. But it wasn't at Dar and his companion Tasha Kanin was looking. It was at three ragged figures approaching from the north. Dar caught his breath. Beneath the shifting shadows of the cloaks the three wore draped over their gnarled forms, he spied the glimmer of unsheathed blades.
11. Immediately after speaking with Jess Weasen about Tavo, Tasha Kanin departed Backing Fell to renew her search. Hearing the old woman tell the tale of what had happened to her parents and brother had left her shaken and unsure of what she was doing, but Tasha had made up her mind to continue on. No matter what her brother had done, no matter how sick or angry or disturbed he was, she had to try to help him. If she abandoned him now, he was lost. There was no one else who would bother looking for him or to whom he could turn.
He would continue on his rampage through the Westland villages and beyond until someone imprisoned or killed him. No matter the danger to herself, she could not allow this. She could not live with herself if she let it happen. So she flew her small airship east, in the direction Tavo had taken, stopping frequently at small villages and outlying camps in an effort to find his trail. There was no other way for her to track him, no other way that made any sense. He was travelling alone and with a purpose that only he could know, so she had little to go on. She found the village Jess Weazen had described to her, a tiny hamlet with a scattering of shacks and ramshackle homes and a tavern and smithy's forge, much later that same day. A rumour of its misfortune had spread to other, larger villages not far away and led her to it. She left her airship concealed in nearby woods and entered near dusk, a solitary presence entering a ghost town. No one was about. Only a few lights shone in the windows of the shacks, but a solitary light was visible through a boarded-up window of the tavern, so she entered. The barroom was empty, the serving counter deserted. The light emanated from a candle-lit lantern hanging from the back wall. In its feeble glow, she could see the remains of smashed tables and chairs and holes in the walls of the building. There were dark stains all across the wooden floor, and in places, pieces of the ceiling had been torn away. At first she thought the building deserted, but then a haggard, empty-eyed serving woman walked out of the kitchen area from behind the bar and stared at her.
"We're closed," she said.
Tasha walked over to her.
"I'm looking for the person who did—"
She hesitated, then gestured at the room.
"All this?"
The woman frowned.
"What's he to you?"
Tasha hesitated. Best not to reveal too much.
"We grew up in the same village. I heard what happened here. I thought maybe I could talk to him."
The serving woman shook her head.
"Last one to try that? Ended up that stain over there?"
She pointed at a particularly large spattering of dried blood.
"I carted his body out back with the others. Burned them all to keep any sickness from spreading to those of us who were left."
She gave Tasha a sharp look.
"What makes you think he would listen to you? He isn't in his right mind, you know. Wouldn't listen to me, or to any of those men he killed. So why would he listen to you?" "We were friends when he was younger. Before any of this. Are you saying talking won't work anymore?" "I'm saying exactly that."
The woman brushed back her lank hair and frowned some more, remembering.
"I could tell something was wrong with him the moment he walked in. I tried to help him, even told him he maybe ought to go somewhere else. It's a rough crowd comes into this place, men who don't treat strangers well. He wouldn't listen. Didn't even seem to want to. Then he got into it with a few of the regulars. Bad men, all of them."
She paused, locking gazes with Tasha.
"He just exploded, girl. Went all the way crazy. He had some sort of terrible magic in his voice. He sang. He did. An awful sound. And he tore those men and everyone else in the room apart. Made them explode. He was terrible to watch. I was hiding in the kitchen, one eye watching through the door when I could stand it. Tables and chairs flying, bodies tossed about, blood everywhere. I couldn't do nothing. I didn't even want to try, not with him."
Images of what had happened flashed through Tasha's mind, raw and ugly. Everything she was hearing about her brother suggested that he had passed beyond her reach.
"Do you know where he went afterward?"
she asked. The woman nodded.
"Funny about that. There's an old woman who lives up the road a ways, just at the east edge of this village. She found him and took him in. Crazy thing to do, you know. He's all covered in blood when he comes up to her door, and she takes him in anyway. He stays the night with her, leaves in the morning, and the woman's none the wiser about what he's done. Calla Lily, she calls herself. For the flower, you know. Lucky she's still alive. But she is."
"So perhaps Tavo isn't beyond helping after all," Tasha thought, allowing herself a small shred of momentary hope.
"Did you speak to her?" "Of course I spoke to her. How else would I know all this?"
"Did she say where the boy went after he left her?"
"Didn't say, 'cause she didn't know. He just left. Hardly spoke to her at all. He went east, I think she said. Just walked away.
A pause.
You got to be going now, girl. Like I said, we're closed. But take some good advice. Turn around and go back to wherever it is you come from. Don't waste your time on that young man. He's just marking time until someone does for him.
Tasha went back to her airship and flew on. She thought about visiting Calla Lily, but decided there was little else she would learn from her. She needed to keep moving, to keep trying to find him before he did any further damage. And there was every reason to believe he would. His mental state had deteriorated beyond anything she'd ever imagined possible. The danger of him harming anyone who crossed him in even the smallest way was now undeniable.
Even if it happens to be me.
But she had made up her mind. She would take her chances. She slept that night in fields beyond the forest regions that surrounded Backingfell and the unfortunate hamlet where Tavo had done so much damage, unwilling to stay anywhere that reminded her of what she had come home to. She curled up in the cockpit of her aircraft and wrapped herself in blankets against the cold of the night air. But there was nothing she could do about the chill that had settled into her bones with this day's discoveries. She wondered if she would ever rid herself of the horror that was consuming her every time she thought of her brother. As a result, she slept hardly at all and woke, worn and dismayed. From there, she continued eastward, conducting a leapfrogging search of the countryside, following the shores of the Rillsong toward the Turfing, stopping frequently to ask the same questions over and over again. There were a few who had seen a young man such as she described, a solitary, bedraggled figure passing close by homes and towns, but never entering. There were one or two who had talked to him. They remembered him as hollow-eyed and withdrawn, barely able to voice the two questions he asked each of them.
"Do you know a girl named Tasha? Do you know where she might have gone?"
Until finally, toward the end of the day, she found someone who remembered the questions differently.
"Do you know a druid named Drisker Ark? Do you know where he lives?"
She felt a sinking feeling in her stomach when she heard this. Somehow, Tavo had found out where she had gone, and was tracking her. Somehow, he must have stumbled on one of the people she had talked to on her way to Emberon while searching for Drisker, and she had been remembered. It wouldn't have been difficult for them to recall. Her physical appearance was distinctive enough. And there would have been no reason for them not to reveal what they knew. So now he had a specific destination. But what did he intend to do once he reached it? She thought of her parents, torn to pieces, blooded beyond recognition, victims of his fury and his vengeance. Did he plan to do the same to her? Or did he seek her because she was all he had left, and he was desperate to find her so that she could help him?
"Oh, Tavo, why?"
she whispered to herself, saddened by both possibilities. She turned northeast to fly back to Emberon. She might as well return there and face him. She was reminded of Drisker Ark's journey to Paranor with the Highlander Dali, and she wondered what had happened to them and if they had returned yet. Drisker's mission to reach the druids had been so urgent, and there was reason to be afraid for him. She hoped he had settled things by now. But even so, she did not care for the prospect of his returning only to find her brother waiting for him. Even with a blade to help protect him, he could be facing a serious threat. And the thought of Drisker being forced to hurt or kill Tavo because she wasn't there to intercede was even more troubling. So she pressed ahead, flying deep into the night, sleeping poorly once more to rise early and continue on the second day in the same fashion. It was arduous and debilitating, her time spent turning over and over the possibilities of what she might find when she reached Emberon, of what sort of disaster awaited her there. None. She kept telling herself. But she didn't believe it. She understood how unlikely it was. There was no point in pretending otherwise, and she knew it, even if she couldn't help herself. Then, well into the afternoon of that second day, her airship broke down. She felt it begin to lose power, and she was quick to land on a barren stretch of plains not far from the juncture of the matted brakes and Dray Wood. Once on the ground, she began an examination of the vessel's workings, her knowledge minimal enough to cause her to wonder if she would even recognize the problem once she found it. She was in the midst of her investigation when she caught sight of three ragged figures approaching from the north. She stopped what she was doing and moved away from her craft to watch them. They were ragged,
soiled creatures. Hard men with hungry looks and little kindness in their faces. She was in trouble, although not the sort she couldn't handle. And then, suddenly, unexpectedly, she sensed someone else watching her. No one she could see, just eyes watching from a place far away by a means she could sense but not identify. Magic, she thought at once. But whose? A few moments later the sensation faded. Whoever had been watching her had ceased to do so. She wondered at once if it was Driska. He would be the one most likely to use magic. He could have returned, found her gone, and decided to come after her.
Troubles, little lady?
One of the men approaching asked in a harsh whisper. It sounded to her as if his vocal cords had been damaged in some way, as if speaking was difficult for him. His companions said nothing, but she caught a glimpse of a knife beneath one's tattered clothing, the blade held close to his body. She faced them squarely. "Do you know anything of airships?" she asked them pointedly. "You don't look like you do."
"Looks can be deceiving,"
another said, the one who was hiding the knife.
"Let's have a peek. See if we can help you out."
She didn't think he was talking about her vessel. She raised her hand.
"Stop right there."
Her tone of voice brought them up short. There was iron in it, a clear indication that she believed she was able to back up her warning. The men exchanged glances.
"Now that's no way to be,"
said the first.
"Maybe not, but that's the way it is. So turn around and walk away."
The men had sullen, dangerous looks on their faces.
"We're not leaving until we're ready," said the one with the knife. "And we ain't any sort of ready just yet." "Don't be foolish," the first said to her. "We can do this the easy way or the hard way. Makes no difference to us. But you can be sure of this. It's going to happen."
Tasha shook her head.
"No, it isn't.
I'll say it one more time. Walk away. Don't make me hurt you. Because if you take one more step, I will."
"Oh, missy, that ain't how you should be talking to us,"
the knife man was whining.
"You should be careful what you say."
His body uncoiled in a snake-like motion and the hidden knife flashed through the air. Before she could act, the blade buried itself in her shoulder, knocking her backward and leaving her sprawled on the ground, grimacing with pain. The men charged her in a flurry of arms and legs and shouts, trying to overwhelm her. They might have done so easily enough if it had been anyone else. But even injured, Tasha Kanin was more than a match for them. She howled in fury, and the wish song instantly halted their charge as suddenly as if they had run into a stone wall. They crumpled to the ground, grasping in anger and pain. One tried to rise, and she used her magic to pick him up and toss him 20 feet away. The other two watched it happen, and then scrambled to their feet. Picking up their companion, they staggered away without uttering another word, looks of disbelief etched on their faces. An odd pang of guilt struck Tasha in that moment. What she had just done had not been so different from what Tavo had done in that tavern. She had used the wish song as a weapon, admittedly to defend herself, but hadn't that been true of her brother as well? The wish song was a heavy burden. It imbued the user with both great power and great responsibility. But there was one difference in the ways she and her brother had used it. Her victims had been allowed to walk away alive. Tavo's had not. Tasha watched her attackers until they were out of sight and then pulled the blade from her shoulder. She was bleeding freely and she felt flushed and shaky. She rose and stumbled over to the airship. In the storage bin were bandages and healing ointments, and she quickly tended her wound. The knife was not clean, and she worried about infection, but there was nothing more she could do about it now. What mattered was that she repair the airship, so she could fly for help. She opened the pass tubes and began to test the diapson crystals for effectiveness. The crystals were charged, so she moved to the radium drawers. Halfway through her investigation, she found the problem. The left pass tube connector had worked its way loose from its seating. She tightened it anew, and within minutes she was setting out once more. By then it was late in the day. She knew she should stop and rest, but she also knew she should hurry. So she flew on until nightfall, before setting down only a few miles below the Wren.
There she changed her dressing, ate a little food, drank a little water, and went to sleep. When she woke the next morning, her wound was throbbing painfully, and she knew she was in trouble. In the city of Arishag, far to the east of where Tasha found herself, Ketter Vaz sat behind his desk in the Prime Minister's office and stared silently at the man standing before him. The man was a junior officer of a Federation garrison stationed in Varfleet, who had been dispatched to investigate rumours of a disturbance in the vicinity of Paranor several days earlier. Vaz's own first commander of the main body of the Federation army, who had been summoned to hear the junior officer's report, stood off to one side, listening to his scout.
All bore stunned looks on their faces. "The Druid's keep is gone," Vaz said after long moments, repeating the newcomer's words in a tone of clear disbelief. "You are certain of this?"
"I was there. I saw for myself."
The other man shifted his feet uncomfortably. He was clearly unhappy with having been delegated by his commanding officer to deliver the news personally.
"There's nothing left of it. The ground on which it stood is empty. It's as if nothing was ever there."
The Prime Minister steepled his fingers before him in contemplation.
How is this possible?
The question frightened him. Did the Scar invaders possess such terrible power? That envoy seemed to hint they did, although Vaz had not for a moment believed it possible. But there it was. This messenger from Varfleet had just said the Scar had disposed of the Druids, and it appeared they had.
The Druids are gone too. All of them.
There were no Druids at the site, though it is possible some fled. In any case, there were no witnesses to what happened. None that I could find, at any rate. Paranor and its Druids have disappeared, Prime Minister. Every last vestige of the Order is vanished.
You searched?
There wasn't much searching required. The truth of it was mostly in what I could see for myself. Or not see.
Vaz's narrow features tightened.
That the Druids were gone, their order wiped out and their members dead or scattered, was the best news he had received in a very long time.
Paranor had been a thorn in the Federation's side for countless generations, but no one had thought it possible to eliminate them altogether. Yet the Scar had accomplished this practically overnight, and the Federation war against magic and its uses appeared to be over. Without the Druids to collect and manage magic in all its various forms, the elves were left isolated, the only race solely dependent on such power. Without the Druids, the employment of magic might well be stamped out entirely.
"We can't be certain exactly when it happened,"
Araxin Dresh, his first commander, observed.
"No one seems to know. Word's gotten back to us quickly enough, but even so..."
"Even so," Vaz interrupted, "not quickly enough for us to find witnesses or survivors. So we are left to imagine the particulars."
He paused.
"What's become of these invaders? Where are they now?"
The messenger glanced at Dresh for support and found none.
"I don't know, Prime Minister." He spoke quickly, nervously. "I was told to come at once to Arishag to report what I had seen, but there was no one at the site of the Druid's keep. There might be a report by tomorrow."
Ketter Vaz nodded. If he wasn't so bothered by the implications of all this, he would have been more willing to celebrate what, on the face of things, was a stunning accomplishment. But his moment of jubilation had already turned to one of concern. What did the Scar intend next, and what was he going to do about it? Could he rely on the envoy's promise that the Scar were seeking an alliance? Could he believe the Scar would leave the Southland alone if Vaz agreed to their terms? The answers to his questions were swift in coming. By the following day, a second messenger had arrived. First Commander Dresh brought him before Vaz immediately. From the look on the commander's face, the news was not good.
"Tell me what you found,"
Ketter Vaz ordered brusquely.
"Prime Minister, we discovered the main body of the invaders' army encamped on the north shore of the Myrmidon River. They number somewhat less than 1,000 soldiers. There is no clear indication of what they are preparing to do next. My commander positioned men on this side of the river to monitor their movements and report back when they know anything further."
Ketter Vaz nodded, expressed his thanks and dismissed the man, gesturing for Dresh to remain behind. He was not happy to discover the Scar were right up against Federation territory. The messenger from the Scar Princess had promised they would not attempt to occupy any part of the Federation. But the borderlands were a Federation protectorate,
and the Myrmidon was their northern perimeter. If they weren't intending an invasion of the borderlands, then why were they setting up their camp at the edge of its borders? He remained where he was, for a moment, looking out the window across the vast expanse of the city of Arishak. Araxin Dresh stood perfectly still, waiting patiently. Viles expected